Hey, it's Scott Petrick with another episode of the Brown Zone Zone Coverage Podcast. The NFL draft started last night without the Browns. They're set to get involved tonight with picks 74 and 98 in the third round. General Manager Andrew Berry begins the weekend with eight picks and plenty of work to do with the depth of the roster. Here to discuss that and more, as always, is Dave Chudowski of Go, the WKYC Morning News. Hey, Chud.
Scott, how's it going? Good to be here with you as always. I got to tell you, isn't it? I talked about it this morning on the show on Channel 3, but it's just wild how life works. 2 years ago, Cleveland hosting the draft. I mean, it's like the biggest deal, craziness in the city. And then last night, just nothing at all. Like, it's just the complete 180. Don't even have a pick.
Oh my gosh, it's completely different. And first of all, that draft in Cleveland feels like 10 years ago, and it was two, right? I mean, it really does. For me, it feels like forever ago. And then even last year, you know, the Browns didn't have the first-round pick, but they were supposed to draft at number 44. So I was engaged in the first round because you never knew. Maybe they would move up. And then last night, there was no chance they would move up, right? Andrew Berry told us as much last week. So it was just different. Like, it felt disconnected. And I still kept track of everything and following all the picks, but completely different. And I'm sure fans, you know, felt the same way.
So Bryce Young to Carolina with the first pick out of Alabama. C.J. Stroud, the Buckeyes quarterback, goes to the Texans. How about the Texans then? That was crazy. They trade up to get the third pick. And, I mean, they're able to do that because they have all these draft picks now thanks to the Browns, right?
Yeah, they used number 12, right, which was the Browns pick in the first round. It was the second of the three first-rounders they gave up for Deshaun Watson last year. Yeah, so they used that as part of the package to move up from 12 to 3 to take Will Anderson Jr., the pass rusher out of Alabama. I'll tell you what, Chud, I thought the Texans were going to screw this up. And part of that was because they've screwed up so much in, you know, recent past. And part of that was you kept hearing rumors that they didn't like C.J. Stroud. They were going to pass on C.J. Stroud. And I thought that was a terrible idea. I thought he was the best quarterback in the draft. And even if you like Young better, if Young goes one, you had to take a quarterback at two. The Texans do not have, or did not have, a legitimate quarterback on the roster. And it made no sense to me. So I thought for them to do the right thing and get their quarterback and then be aggressive and go get the best defender in the draft, at least in their estimation, I thought it was a big win for the Texans. And surprising, just given their recent struggles.
Yeah, I mean, incredible. We're bashing them yesterday, heading into the draft, about, you know, possibly taking a defensive lineman or, you know, at least someone on defense passing on the quarterback. They really shook it up last night, no question. Yeah. Three out of the first four picks were quarterbacks, which that's a change from last year when you didn't see much quarterback action. So I guess, what'd you think of the draft overall in the first round?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I think there were a lot of surprises, and that speaks to me. It speaks to the nature of the draft, right? I think there was a lot of differing opinions on the players, which means, you know, Team X really liked this player, so, oh my gosh, he goes in the top 10, while Team Y likes a different player, you know, and they just have – the boards are so different that I think that leads to a lot of mystery and a lot of surprises during the draft. I'll tell you what, I thought – I was surprised that two running backs went as high as they did. You know, there was a lot of talk about Bijan Robinson, the University of Texas guy. He winds up going to the Falcons at 8, which was a surprise to me. I mean, I thought about it, right? I did some mock draft, and I thought about putting him there, but it just felt too high to me. And, you know, obviously the Falcons didn't, and I know he's a really good player. So, like, I get it, but eight's too high for a running back. I don't care how good he is. But then the Lions go with another running back in the top 15. To me, it speaks of John Dorsey's impact, because John Dorsey's an old-school guy. We know he likes to take his, he believes in running backs. We saw him take Nick Chubb relatively high. And obviously that turned out to be a great pick, right, in 2018. But it just felt like a John Dorsey pick, even though he's not the GM. That's what it felt like to me. I'm surprised two went that high. I thought, you know, receivers waited. No receiver went really high. And then there was a run kind of in the second third of the draft on receivers, I think four in a row. And I thought the Eagles, you know, coming off a Super Bowl loss, had a really good draft. They trade up one spot and take Jalen Carter. Now, huge off-the-field questions with Jalen Carter, the Georgia D-tackle, but one of the top players talent-wise in the draft, and he goes into a set system, a really good defensive line. And then they take Georgia edge rusher Nolan Smith, who I thought was going to go in the top 10, and they get him at 30. So, you know, it's one of those situations where the rich get richer, I think, because they're so smart, and they let the board kind of fall to them, and then they be aggressive when they have the chance to be aggressive.
Yeah, a lot of fantasy people were excited about that running back selection at 8. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that's interesting. You're right, because you're right. And it adds, right, if you get a guy taken in the top 10 or top 15, whatever, right, you know that they're going to get a bunch of carries, right? They're going to get a bunch of action. So all of a sudden, those couple of guys go up higher, I would assume. I mean, you're the fantasy guy, right? All of a sudden, those guys – you know, Robinson, and then it's Jahmyr Gibbs, who went number 12 out of Alabama to Detroit. You would assume that they're going to be the focal points immediately.
Yeah, absolutely. How about before we move on to the Browns, just looking at the 12th pick, and obviously the Texans traded it, but let's just say the Browns still had that pick.
Yeah.
Do you think we really missed out on a guy that would have been there at 12?
That's a good question, Chud. I mean, if you look at the Browns' biggest needs, to me, we're talking D-line and linebacker. They're not taking a linebacker at 12. So it would have been, I would say, the best defensive lineman that would have been available at 12. And, you know, there were good ones on the board. You could have taken that Nolan Smith. I think he would have been in that conversation. And I get it, during the draft, and I'm glad you brought that up. I think during the draft, it's all about, oh, my gosh, all these teams are getting better, right? The Steelers get a tackle. The Ravens get another receiver. You know, Cincinnati gets another D lineman. And it's like, oh my gosh, the Browns haven't done anything. But I think you do have to take a step back and say, well, they got Deshaun Watson. And I think you can forget that a little bit, you know, while the draft's going on. And even tonight, Elijah Moore, the receiver. Well, that's why the Browns don't have a second round pick. So you have to remember that. And I think Andrew Berry, I'm pretty confident, Andrew Berry would look back and say, hey, Deshaun Watson was worth all of this because he gives them a chance to have a franchise quarterback, right? Now, he needs to play like that, and we've talked about that a million times. But
yeah,
going after your quarterback, we see how important it is. We see teams trade up for it. We see three guys go in the first three picks last night, right? So I think Andrew Berry would say we're comfortable with how that played out.
Yeah, the key there is we need it to be the old Deshaun Watson. That's the key.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, yeah.
As you said. Yeah. Okay, so Browns have two picks tonight, 74 and 98, in the first 100 selections. So they have two picks in the first 100. That's how they're selling it. And then they have eight total choices from rounds 3 to 7 overall, when you include rounds 4 through 7 on Saturday. Before we break anything else down, do you think there's any chance they will trade out of that pick tonight in the third round?
I do, Chad. I think there's a decent chance, and they could go up or down. You know, I asked Andrew Berry about this specifically. The state of the roster, right? The need to win now. A lot of veterans, a lot of big money guys. If a player's falling, are you more inclined with this state of the roster to move up from number 74? And he said, that's a good question, but, you know, each situation's its own. You got to treat it specifically. But he said, philosophically, we're always inclined to move down and add more picks. So we always have to remember that. If you're a fan, if you're a media watching, yes, there's a chance they move up. It has to be a special situation. If not, their default is move back a little bit, add more picks. I think they want to make a pick tonight. I don't think they want to just move everything into the third day of the draft. But could they move from 74 to 79 and pick up an extra pick in the fifth round or a fourth rounder next year? Yeah, they could easily do that depending on how the board falls. So I would say, you know, let's give it a 30% chance they move down, a 15% chance they move up, you know, 5 or 10 picks to get one specific player, and then whatever's left, a 55% chance that they stay at 74. And then, you know, the same thing at 98. You know, then once you get later, I think there's more of a chance of movement the deeper you get into the draft. So I would expect, you know, Andrew Berry's made 7 trades in the draft over the last 3 years. So I certainly expect him to make a trade or two. I'm just not convinced the first one will be at number 74.
Before you go play your lottery ticket today in Mega Millions, I want to know, who are they picking at 74? Who's the guy, Scott? You know.
Yeah, I don't know, Judd. It's so hard, right? I mean, they don't know. I mean, they have a list of guys, right? And I'd be curious, and maybe Andrew would tell us this, reveal this to us. Like, right now, what is their pool of players that they're looking at 74? Is it 5? Is it 3? Is it 8? Right? Like, I think those are reasonable thoughts. But they don't know. I mean, they don't know who's going to go. Now, they could have a guy that they think is going to be at 74 that they love and they think nobody else loves him that much, right? And maybe that's what will happen. But then if that's the case, then they might think about moving down because they think he'll still be there at 78 or 80 or whatever. But when I did my mock draft, I went with Zach Harrison, the D end out of Ohio State. He has the traits that the Browns are looking for. He has rare length and power and size. You know, he's like 6'6", big dude, can set an edge, can rush the passer. Didn't have great production at Ohio State from a sack perspective. I think 4 was his high. But when you turn on his highlight film, he's forcing fumbles that turn into touchdowns. He's tipping passes that turn into interceptions, that turn into touchdowns. He was really active. He's a big-time recruit. Probably didn't live up to the hype going into Ohio State, but was a captain, well-liked. I talked to one of his coaches at Ohio State. So I think he's a guy that the Browns would be happy with. I think he fits their needs. I think he fit, you know, they view defensive end as a hugely premium position. So if he were there, I think the Browns would really have to consider him. And I think there's a chance he is there at 74.
So would you say tomorrow when you're looking back on this and looking forward as well right now, and you've broken down the positions of need in the past, and we can do that a little more right now, but bottom line is, are you going to be disappointed if they don't take a defensive lineman with that pick?
No, and I think part of that, Judd, is and Andrew Berry stresses this, you have to be flexible, you have to be open-minded, period. You have to be especially that way when you don't have a first or second round pick. They cannot dictate this draft at all. So if a specific offensive player fell to 74 that they liked, there's not a huge need on offense, right? They have all their starters returning. They added Elijah Moore. They added Jordan Akins, a tight end. But if, you know, a great running back fell to 74, I think there's a chance the Browns take him. So I don't think you can pigeonhole it. I would be surprised if one of their two picks tonight, assuming they make two picks, is not on defense. And I'd be stunned if they do go defense and one of those two picks is not from the front 7. So D-line or linebacker, because to me, linebacker is the most pressing need. And I know they don't want to chase need. But the reality is they need to get younger at linebacker. They need to get healthier at linebacker. And the draft presents that opportunity.
So rank their biggest needs, in your opinion. You just said linebacker's number 1. Maybe go 1 through 4 there. What do you think? Or if you have more.
I'm going linebacker, D-end, D-tackle, and safety. Now,
okay,
you know, like they could use another receiver. I think they need to get better at tight end. They could use another running back. Like I wrote a thing today, and people can go to brownzone.com. And it's, are they really going to make 8 picks and keep all 8 rookies on the roster? It doesn't feel like the roster's set up like that. But if you go position by position and you start talking the 2nd and 3rd teams, right? Who fits in the rotation on D-line? Who plays linebacker? They don't really have 4 safeties, right? They have 4 on the roster, but they have 2 starters. They have an undrafted rookie from a year ago and somebody else they picked up, right? Like they need a safety. My point is they need depth, and they need depth in a lot of different positions. And depth, whether that's immediate contribution depth or just competing with guys on the roster now. And I could name 8 or 10 positions where they need depth. So we could go through those, but I think the most pressing would be the 4 I mentioned.
Who do you think's the best player left in the draft right now that didn't get picked in the first round that kind of shocks you? Or maybe give me a list of guys that you think, either way, whatever you feel like
talking. No, that's a good question, Chud. I think Will Levis, the quarterback out of Kentucky, I didn't love him, right? I didn't love him, but I thought he'd be gone. So I think that's a surprise that he's not gone. I don't know if he's the best player left. I know Mel Kiper Jr. thinks he is. Joey Porter, the corner out of Penn State. I thought he was going to go in the middle of the first round. He's still on the board. Brian Branch, he's a nickelback / safety from Alabama. I thought he'd go at the end of the first round. He's still on the board. And then tight end. There's a couple of tight ends that felt like they would go higher. Michael Mayer from Notre Dame was one of them. Darnell Washington from Georgia is another one. He's a huge guy. And I think what happened is the tight ends, there's so many good ones that I think – and it's so deep, this draft, that I think teams said, hey, we can wait to take them, to take one. And that hurt the guys. I don't think it says anything about them as players. I just think the depth of the position affected it. And I think that could help the Browns because I would expect the Browns, again, if they keep all the picks, if they have, picks, to use one on a tight end to come in and compete with Harrison Bryant to be that third tight end this year.
Whoever they pick at 74, if, of course, they stay there, do you expect that to be a guy that will make an immediate impact?
It should. He should. And I'll tell you what, in the Browns, there haven't been that many drafts where they haven't had early picks. Last year they traded out, so they didn't have a pick until 68. Martin Emerson Jr., the corner, came in and had a really nice year. Played all 17 games, tied for the team lead with 15 passes defense. Played a bunch. Moved ahead of Greedy Williams on the depth chart and stayed there all year long. Wound up making 6 starts. But my point is there's more focus, right? Whoever that first pick is, whether it's the second pick in the draft or the 74th pick, when you're that top guy, there's more focus on you. Now, it wasn't super intense last year on Emerson, and part of that was because the whole Watson circus that was going on. But remember when the Browns drafted Bo Bell? I think it was 2008. He was their first pick of that draft in the fourth round. Bo Bell wound up not being any kind of a player, right? But the focus was really on him because – you had to focus on somebody, right? You're at rookie minicamp. You got to write about somebody. You're in the training camp. You got to pay attention to the rookies. So I think there will be some maybe added pressure on whoever the Browns take at 74. But like I referenced on the last question, Chud, was the last topic, was they do have depth issues right now. And so therefore, I think whoever they take at 74 has to be part of the conversation. It doesn't have to be a starter right away, but should be in the mix, whether it's deep tackle or linebacker especially, come in and say, hey, this guy's either competing for a spot or part of the rotation right away. And I would say the same thing at the end. They don't need a starter at the end. They have Myles Garrett and they have Oboe, but they have a question mark at that third end, and that's an important spot. So, yeah, I think they need their guy to come in and contribute. Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
Man. Boy, I'll tell you, I was looking at the list of third-round picks in Browns history. It's not really a stunning list. What do you think? I mean, who are some of the best third-round picks that you remember?
Yeah, no, you're right, Chad. I had somebody else ask, just throw a couple out of me. And it was Charlie Fry and Colt McCoy, right? And I'd forgotten they were both third-round picks, neither of whom, had a major impact on this franchise. Now, Colt McCoy wound up, he's a guy still in the league, still in a backup. But when you look at what he did with the Browns, you would say he had a huge impact. I read somewhere online a list of the top 10, and oh my gosh, it's a bad list, Judd. I mean, Duke Johnson was number 10, and I love Duke. I thought Duke was he was a good enough player, and we got along really well in the locker room. But if Duke Johnson's the top 10 third-round pick, number 10 third-round pick in Browns history, it's not a strong list. So, Daylon McCutchen was on there. He was a good player. I think he belongs on that list. You look at the Browns picks recently, and to me, that's a concern because, Andrew Beard, he needs a hit on these picks tonight, right? For all the reasons we've mentioned. But his third round picks, Anthony Schwartz is probably his worst draft pick he's made. He was a third rounder. Jacob Phillips and Jordan Elliott have not been is desire, right? Jordan Elliott started last year finally and wasn't very good, right? Now he'll probably get another chance this year, but you know, he was a disappointment, I thought, last year is a starting D tackle. Jacob Phillips hasn't stayed healthy and hasn't been good enough when he's played. And then last year it was Alex Wright, who didn't do much as a rookie, David Bell, who was okay, and then Emerson Jr. So Emerson Jr. has been clearly the best third-round pick that that Barry's made in the last 3 years. But getting back to overall, I mean, I'm looking at this list that Cleveland.com did. Don Cockcroft, they have the kicker number one. If you have a kicker as your best third-round pick ever, right, that's a stretch. Dave Logan, number two. I like
Dave Logan.
Right? He was a big-time receiver in the cardiac kid days. So I'd probably go Dave Logan and Daylon McCutcheon and, you know, Reggie Camp. I mean, again, you're like you said.
I was going to say, Reggie Camp is the one I was looking at.
Yeah, I mean, he was a good player, but he wasn't great. No, he was 35 sacks. He held the season high, the season sack record for a long time. So, yeah, I'll give you that.
I mean, there's a few other names that I want to throw out there. Remember Tim Manoa?
Oh, my gosh. Yes, I do. The fullback out of Penn State. Van Waiters, linebacker out of Indiana. Yeah.
Yeah. Anthony Pleasant.
Yeah, he was pretty good.
Yeah.
I think he's a Belichick guy.
Remember Zaire?
Oh, my gosh. Another quarterback. When you go Zaire, then you think about Bernie getting cut, right? It's weird how all these players – place, you know, and they're those guys are all kind of in my wheelhouse, right? When I was teenager, early 20, you know, college, and it puts me back into a spot where I go Zaire, Bernie, I go Pleasant, Belichick, you know.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Hey, just memory. Yeah, it totally does. It just takes you back. Did you mention Carl Nassib?
I didn't. Yeah, he was. He was a player.
I felt like wanted more out of him though.
Yeah, well, you know, they got rid of him. I think he was a Dorsey. He wasn't a Dorsey pick. I think he was a Sashi pick, and then Dorsey took over and got rid of him pretty quickly, right? Like, I don't know if he got the chance to stick around. I mean, he's a viable player in this league. It feels like every time I flip on a national televised game, he's playing. Like, he seems to always be. When I'm watching another team play, because he's bounced around a little bit. But when they took him this is probably the story that only I care about, but I remember when they drafted him, I remember having, like, I watched a bunch of film on him for some reason. And I was like, this guy's not worth a third round pick. Like, I made this declaration in the media room. And then, you know, then there's all this hype about him because he's a third round pick, blah, blah, blah. And I just never thought he had, like, elite skills, and he wound up not. But he turned out to be a productive player, which really is what you're looking for in the third round.
Yeah. I'm also looking at number 74 overall selection since 1970.
Yeah.
A lot of these guys, I might not just be picking up right away, but one that really stands out is you go back to 2001, Steve Smith, senior wide receiver, Carolina.
Yeah. He jumped out at me because the Browns put out that list too, which to me is an interesting topic, but you know, it's all random, right? What's the difference between a guy at 74 and 75, right? But I the guys I highlighted were Justin Tuck. Yeah, had a big career with the Giants at defensive end. Steve Smith, senior. Curtis Martin, the Hall of Famer, running back. And then Will Shields, the Hall of Fame guard for the Chiefs.
I missed those two.
Yeah, those were the guys. Okay. They were 93 and 95 were Shields and Martin.
Okay. Yeah, Chris Berman used to call him my favorite Martin.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. A couple more things here before we get going. Would you rather have Elijah Moore or a second round pick tonight?
Yeah, it's Elijah Moore, Chud, except for the fact that you want action tonight, right? Don't want to wait till 10 o'clock. I mean, that's the only reason you wouldn't want Elijah Moore. I think the other reason would be you have him for two more years on his rookie contract. You draft a guy, you'd have him for 4 years. So, I mean, there's a difference if you got an outstanding receiver. But the Browns knew who – they had a good idea who would be on the board at 42. And there's still receivers left, right? And there's good receivers left. Jalin Hyatt from Tennessee's out there. Keep track of my – he's out there. Downs from North Carolina is out there. There's a guy from Michigan State's out there. But my point is, the Browns knew that these guys, there's a potential for these specific receivers to be available. Cedric Tillman from Tennessee. And they decided that they like Moore better and that Moore's going to have a bigger impact. And I certainly think he'll have a bigger impact this year. And it's all about now, right? So I think the trade for Moore was the right move. They didn't give up a draft pick. They just moved down 32 spots. I liked it then. I still like it now. And I think no matter who goes at 42, I would say Elijah Moore has more value to the Browns right now. DeJuan Jones, no, that's not. It's Downs. Josh Downs is a receiver I was trying to come up with.
Did last time we talked was before Andrew Berry talked last week. Did you get anything out of what he said last week?
Not really. I mean, I hit on a couple of things. It's just the overall philosophies, right? Trade up, trade down. You know, the flexibility you have to have. Yeah. I thought the news nuggets were, you know, Perrion Winfrey is still on the team after getting arrested. Did not rule out if there's more information comes to light. That they could cut him, but he's still on the team right now. He would not tell us that they're going to pick up the fifth-year option of Jedrick Wills. I assume they will. They have until May 2nd to do so. Other teams have already said or done it. The Browns haven't yet, but they have the deadline by Tuesday. And then he did say, and this it's not a surprise, but the fact that he actually said it, I suppose, is somewhat newsworthy. He said they need to add to the defensive end pile. But I think if you looked at the depth chart, you know, they had Myles Garrett, they have Oboe, they have Alex Wright and Isaiah Thomas, and Sam Kamara, who didn't play last year, but he's on the roster, and that's it. So you can't go into camp with only five defensive ends. They need depth there for sure. They need quality depth. But he said as much, and that was a nugget that came out of the news conference.
Last thing for you, do you believe in Andrew Berry when it comes to building this team? I mean, do you have faith that he can get it done? Finish what they started?
Yeah, Chad, I think it's a big question mark. I do. There's a lot to like about Andrew Berry. I think he's incredibly smart. I think, you know, he treats people well. I think he's a stabilizing force within the front office and within the organization. There are certainly good moves that he's made. You know, the biggest obviously is Deshaun Watson, in that we have yet to determine if that was a good move or not. But if you go through his draft picks, you know, he hasn't drafted no one he's drafted has gone to a Pro Bowl, right? I think that's concerning to a level. And it's only been 3 years, but guys go to Pro Bowls in the first 3 years, right? And he hasn't had a guy like that. You know, you look at his best pick is probably Donovan Peoples-Jones, you know, who's been really good for a sixth-round pick. But, you know, okay, so that's a hit. That's a big hit. Martin Emerson Jr. is a hit last year in the third round. But, you know, Jedrick Wills Jr., Greg Newsome II, Grant Delpit, right? These are Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. Those are guys taken in the first two rounds. And, yes, they're starters on this team. But do you look at any of those guys and say they're where you thought they would be? And I would say no. I would, for whatever reason, you know, there's been injuries and there's been other things involved. But, you know, people are critical of Jed Wills still. We don't know if he's going to be the Browns' left tackle for the next 5 years. And you should know that for a number 10 pick. You know, Newsome hasn't had an interception. And I think he's a good player, but he hasn't had a huge impact. Grant Delpit just started to play really well kind of toward the end of last year. And now he's in the last year of his contract. JOK's been hurt and hasn't shown that crazy ability. He's flashed the ability, but hasn't been able to sustain it. And then there's plenty of question marks, like guys that are even bigger question marks. And then you have a bust like Anthony Schwartz, who appears to be a bust. So I think the jury's still out. He's done a good job keeping the talent that he inherited. There's no doubt about that. He's had hits and misses in free agency. So this is a huge draft for Andrew Berry, and it's a huge season for Andrew Berry. And if it doesn't all go to plan, Chud, we could be talking about a new GM next year. That's just where things are right now with this organization.
Yeah, no question. All right, and too bad we're not going to be flipping. Well, I guess by the time the Browns pick, it would probably be over, but too bad we won't have game six. Boy, the Cavs really laid an egg.
Chud, how bad was that?
It was bad.
It really was. Like, and I mean, you get these, you know, your fans get your hopes up. I get it. I'm on these text chains with my buddies, and they just, and not, they obviously they lost quicker than you expected to. They played worse than they expected to. It felt like they didn't play as hard as they needed to, and that's really, like, that's hard to get your head around. Hard for me to get my head around. You talk about, well, you got to learn to play in the playoffs, and I get that. I get that it's a different experience, but couldn't you have figured that out after two games or three games or four games, and it was still the same issues in game five? So, you know, I hate to read too much into, you know, one playoff series, but there's some serious questions that they have to answer about personnel, maybe about the coach, right? I mean, I think this is going to be a really pivotal offseason for them too.
Yeah, it was, you know, it said a lot to me how they came out in game five. You learn a lot about a team, you know, when your back's against the wall, you know, when you're down 3-1. And they just did, it's like they almost, I'm not going to say, they cared, but right. it's just, you would have liked to have seen a better fight to try to push that to a game six. It was almost like, hey, we're done. Let's start our offseason now. We're not going back to New York. Who cares? Not who cares, but you know what I'm getting at.
I do. Right. Right. They made a couple of runs, but you know what? And you can misread body language, right? But it did feel like that. And I don't know. I think some of the Cavs players are just smooth, right? Like, Donovan Mitchell's a smooth player. I think Evan Mobley's smooth. But it felt like just watching them Wednesday night, right? It just felt like there was a lack of sense of urgency. And that's impossible for there to be a lack of sense of urgency in a do-or-die elimination game at home, right? And that's just how it felt. Maybe that's just, you know, me reading into something. But I certainly got that impression, in addition to them being incredibly soft inside.
Yeah, they need to get more physical. They totally got outmatched in that regard. They got pushed around. The rebounding was incredibly bad. Right. The Knicks exposed the Cavs' weaknesses to a high level. And when you don't have, sometimes your weaknesses can be covered up by a star player that overshadows all that. And Donovan Mitchell didn't do that. In fact, he was, compared to his regular season, it was brutal for him, and he knows it. Yeah. And you need your stars to step up in the playoffs, and he certainly did not do that.
Yeah, you're 100% right, 100%.
Yeah, that was tough. Interesting playoffs, though, I got to tell you now. Heat and Knicks, and then, you know, then you got the Celtics and Philly. But, you know, amazing that the Heat get rid of Milwaukee, and then the Western Conference is pretty interesting. So it's going to be interesting to see who gets into the final, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, and I'm not a huge NBA guy, but I've watched a bunch of these playoffs, and the games have been great. And I think if you're a Cavs fan, I think it's even more bothersome that it feels like it's up for grabs, right? The number one seed in the East gets beat. Every game's going down to the wire. You know, Miami did beat Milwaukee. You know, Atlanta takes Boston, you know, an extra game, whatever it is. Like, it feels like all these series are down to the wire, and yet the Cavs played in a series where, you know, they get eliminated in five games. If they won, they'd be playing the Heat, right? And maybe they could have beat the Heat. Like, they'd have home court advantage there. It feels like this was a year. And the NBA is usually the top seeds win, and there's some, you know, it's kind of boring early. And this feels like an upside-down year, and the Cavs couldn't take advantage of it.
Yeah, and I agree with that, and I hear a lot of people say that, but the way they played against the Knicks, there's nothing that tells me that they really would have made a deep run anyway against anyone else.
No, you're 100% right about that. You're 100%, it just felt like in a perfect world, this would have been the opportunity to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, anything you got left? If not, time for me to go take a nap. It's Friday.
It is. It's Friday. No, I appreciate you, Chud. I'm glad we got this in. We needed to get this in before the draft. We'll reconvene next week and break down however many picks the Browns make, right? Could be five, could be six, could be 10. You never know. So we'll have plenty to talk about. I'm sure there will be some buzz finally, depending on who they pick. So thank you, Chud. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This has been another episode of the Zone Coverage Podcast, and you can read all my work at brownzone.com. Thanks a lot.